We are broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. And we have, we will call the roll first. So please call the roll.
Senator Findley.
Senator Findley, present by video.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Excused.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Present by video. Okay, we have one item on our agenda today. If for a work session, we will not be able to pass the bill because the amendment is just being explained today for the first time. So I will open a work session on Senate Bill 108.
Madam Chair Burdick, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern for the Legislative Revenue Office. I am going to explain how the a short explanation about the historic property tax program as it stands, Senate Bill 108, and the Dash 1 amendment. So I'm going to try and share my screen and let me know when you're able to see my screen.
It's up on my computer.
Wonderful. Thank you. So, okay.
Is the rest of the committee, does anybody not have it? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you. So, I'm just going to start off by explaining the sort of general program, the costs of the program, and the value of the program. And I am giving this because I think it's important when we do get to the revenue impact statement. In the first few biennium, we're looking at sort of near-term impacts. And so the cost of the program has two actual costs. In the first year of the program, and I'll explain this in that blue box below, but in the first year of the program, there's an initial value drop on the assessment roll for properties that get enrolled or qualified into the historic special assessment program. So there's a revenue cost on that end. And then in the subsequent years, for the 10 years that the property is in the program, there is a delayed recognition of improvements. So those don't get pulled onto the roll until after the property exits the program, even if, say, for instance, the improvements were made in year two. Now, the value of the program is, in terms of stating the purpose of the program, is rehabilitation, restoration of property that may have otherwise been demolished or just sort of disintegrated or had structural or integrity issues. From a revenue point of view, the value of the program is the recognition of improvements that may not have been performed or committed, but for this program. And that's always a conversation that we have is what sort of investments people make, but for special incentive programs. But from a revenue perspective, after 10 years, those values would come on the roll once the property exits the program. So that being said, just the first sort of phases of the program, the individual applies, and there's the components for the application process, including the historic registry and then the preservation plan itself and the application fee. And if they are accepted into the program, they commit 10% of the RMV or the real market value of their own, that property, into rehabilitation. And then in that first year, there's a property value drop on the roll. And since that is not, to me, self-explanatory, I'm just going to explain it here in this blue box. So, for instance, you could have commercial or residential property. You have property worth $500,000, and then you commit 10% of that. So $50,000 must be spent invested as part of your preservation plan over the first 5 years of your enrollment in the program. And so you spend that money investing in your property, and if the property is prior to the enrollment in the program assessed at $400,000. So I think we all know from Measure 5 and Measure 50 that we don't pay on our real market value. We pay on our assessed value, and we have this personal ratio for our property. That would mean that the assessed value to real market value property or ratio for our property would be 0.8. Now, everyone's ratio is different. It could be 0.6 or 0.4. But if this particular property had a ratio of 0.8, then what would happen in that first year is that particular ratio would be then multiplied again times the assessed value that was already 400,000. And so the assessed value, the specially assessed value under the program for the first year of enrollment would be 320,000. So the first year on the roll, you would see a drop for this particular property of $80,000 per assessed or taxable assessed value. And what happens then is that $400,000 that was originally your assessed value now becomes this sort of like 10-year cap that stays fixed, or that's the frozen value that we hear of. That's a frozen maximum assessed value. And we move up from the $320,000 3% per year, but we would never breach the $400,000 that was originally the assessed value. So that's kind of the structure of the program. In terms of individual properties, get a reduction in their first year value, and then it kind of creeps up by the 3%. That's the current structure of the program. And then what would happen is after the 10 years, subject to the constitutional requirements and also statutory designation, you would be remaved. And the remav is actually not specific to that 0.8 ratio. It would just be whatever the local CPR is for that county. And that the CPR is the average of these values, these ratios around the county. And so whatever the entire county ratio was, that would be applied to your new real market value. But remember, you took $50,000 and invested it into that property, so it's now worth $550,000. And then that would get multiplied by the ratio. And as you're exiting the program, you would have a new assessed value that would recognize the value of those improvements. Are there any questions on that?
Yes, I have one, Jamie. You talk about the 3% increase every year. What about bond measures that fall outside of Measure 50? Would the property be assessed for those?
Thank you, Chair Burdick. So in Oregon, the way that our property tax system is, we have two components. This is the value of our property, and then the rate is the dollars per thousand that's placed or assessed on top of that or multiplied by that value, the base. And so this property isn't getting an exemption. It's getting a different assessed value, but the rate that includes the bonds and your permanent rate and your local option, that combined rate would still be applied to the $320,000.
So it could be more than 3% as most of the time it is in places like where I live.
So interestingly, so for instance, I know in Marion County last year, my property value went up probably by the prescribed 3% because we weren't in a recession, but because we passed some bonds, the total kind of property tax bill, which included those bonds, was, I think, a 4.5% increase. So when you add those bonds on top of it, your property tax bill may go up by more than 3%, even if your value only creeped up by 3%. And that is because the rate went up in addition to the value going up as well.
Right. And so the historical properties under this program are not exempt from that reality, correct?
That is accurate.
Okay. Are there other questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful. Now, what about the Dash 1? Are you talking about the Dash 1 here?
Yeah, would you like me? This is just a one pager, and I've got a little bit of a graph here, and then the dash one. Would you like me to walk through this, or just skip straight to the dash one?
This is your presentation. I just want to make sure the dash one gets covered.
Absolutely, Chair Burdick. So this green box here, just a quick summary. I got some information back from the preservation office in terms of the participation in the program. Over here on the left, the participation count is the last 5 years new entrants into the program. And so there were 6 commercial properties and 15 residential properties entering into the program in 2016. And you can see it kind of moves around, but the count of property per property is about half. And then what you can also see is, even though the number of properties is approximately the same, the value of the commercial properties that enter into the program is generally higher. That's not surprising. And then that first year revenue loss, when, you know, as I mentioned above, like when we look at our revenue impact statement, which will include the first year drop, but also the delayed recognition of improvements, the first year drop that correlates with those different properties that are showing up in the roll. This is kind of what you would see statewide for the program. So the current program, we don't have a revenue impact statement at the moment. We're working through that still, but the most recent tax expenditure report lists the loss at about $10 million for the current year. And then the current program sunsets in July of 2022. So the Senate Bill 108 would have had, so moving down to the dash one, Senate Bill 108 would have had a 10-year sunset, but the dash one now recommends a 6-year sunset. And then the Senate Bill 108 has commercial properties only going forward. That is also maintained in the dash one. And then there is a component for the existing participants that are in the program, either commercial or residential. Going forward, new participants would be allowed as commercial only, but participants that are in the current program and would potentially expire, say, in 3 years or 4 years, they have the Senate Bill 108 with the dash one would allow them to reapply after a 10-year waiting period for existing participants. So they would be allowed one renewal period, whereas currently they're allowed one renewal period, but that's immediately after the period that they're in. And so those are the changes that you get with the program from Senate Bill 108 with the dash one included.
Okay, and I forget what the rationale was for the 10-year waiting period.
Chair Burdick, the 10-year waiting period, let me see, without the 10-year waiting period, the current renewal period is, being eliminated, and if the current revaluation mechanism is also being eliminated, the way that the properties are revaluated while they re-enter the program at the end of the 10 years. And so the mechanism, essentially what what happens is the mechanism for revaluing the properties at the end of 10 years, this would allow those properties to have their improvements recognized on the roll. They get remapped and the full value of the property comes on the roll. But then there's potentially after, say, 20 years at this point from the initial start of the program, the 10-year part participation in the program, and then 10 years on top of that, that there may be additional deterioration that would require reinvestment and a reinvestment in the program. That's how it's been explained to me, both, you know, in talking with the drafter and Chrissy Curran.
Okay, and then Parks and Rec are comfortable with this dash one amendment as far as you know?
Chair Burdick, this dash one amendment came from Parks and Rec, and we worked with LC to get it drafted.
Okay, and then the revenue impact is all local property tax, right? Is there any impact on us?
It's all local property tax, and I'm attempting to stop sharing my screen for you.
Okay. I see a question from Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was curious as to why residential properties were removed.
Senator Finley, I can relay to you what we heard in the public hearings, but this also came from the State Historic Preservation Office, and the rationale was that the historic property tax program was utilized, the investment that was committed and utilized by the commercial properties was a larger percentage than the residential properties. That's my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just learning that Parks and Recreation is represented here in the meeting. Is there someone who would like to elaborate on what Jamie just said about the exclusion of residential properties? And I'd also like to address the 10-year waiting period. So who do we have here?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chrissy Curran. I am the Deputy Director in charge of Heritage Programs for Oregon Parks and Recreation and Director of the State Historic Preservation Office. Senator Finley, there are several reasons we decided to move forward with a commercial only version of this program. And as Jamie mentioned, the investment piece for the commercial, there is a much higher investment, a reinvestment into the community by the commercial properties versus the residential. But also a really important piece of this is the access and inclusion that we are striving for within all our programs at the State Historic Preservation Office. The special assessment program requires a significant investment up front. So property owners have to have pretty big projects and a lot of cash to get started, which leaves out a whole bunch of residential property owners who are, they tend to do one project at a time, really critical projects like plumbing and HVAC and windows, doors, siding, foundation, and roofs. And they really can't scramble up the basically the scope of a project that would make special assessment worth it to them. So we find that it leaves out a lot of people who don't have those resources. That's a significant reason why.
Thank you.
And did the counties weigh in on this at all in your discussions?
Chair Burdick, we have not heard from the counties at all so far.
Okay. All right. Are there other questions from the committee? Senator Riley, are you looking like you're going to ask a question?
So your question about the 10 years, she didn't address that, and I wonder if we could do that.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, that to be honest, the intent of that amendment, the intent of that component of SB 108 was the current program allows a 10-year participation, reassessment, and then 10 more years if you have a certain type of project. What we were looking for is in Senate Bill 108 is the ability to encourage folks to use the program as often as they need it and have qualified projects for the program. So if you, let's say you participated in the 1980s under that 15-year program, you can't apply anymore ever again for this program. But those buildings are now 30 years on and probably owned by a new owner and in need of rehabilitation. So we wanted to make it possible for those owners to participate. So I'm not sure that it came out exactly as we envisioned in the Dash 1 amendment, to be frank.
So what's the solution? Because it does seem kind of odd.
Chair Burdick, I feel like perhaps working with legislative counsel or the Legislative Revenue Office to make sure that wording is exactly where we want it. The main piece of that, the main intent, is to eliminate the two-term restriction and simply make it available as any commercial property owner who's qualified. I think it's a matter of language.
But only those property owners, those residential property owners who have already been in the program, correct?
Chair Burdick, the existing program and the program has always welcomed residential property owners. So those folks who are currently in the program and have residential properties will continue to play out their term, their period. Only the in SB 108, only the commercial properties would be able to move forward.
Okay, I'm trying to understand this. So if somebody's in the program now, they reach the end of the term, then they have to wait 10 years before they can have an extension?
Chair Burdick, that is not the intention. I'm not sure where the waiting period language came from. I just saw it today for the first time.
Okay, well, I think we've got a problem there, because if that's not your intent and it's confusing, I think we need to deal with that. Are there other, Senator Riley, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. So basically, the intent, as I understand it, is for the property owner to be able to reapply at any time that they have a project that qualifies after the end of their 10-year period. You'd like them to be able to reapply anytime they have a qualifying project. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, Senator Riley, yes, that is correct. And it would be a set of projects to be able to make that pencil out.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. And so to reiterate, it's only people who are already in the program that could take advantage of that. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, no, that was not the intent. The intent was that from Senate Bill 108 was to pass, from the beginning of that, of this version of the program, commercial only, that those participants would participate under the rules of this, of that version.
Okay, where you say commercial only, which means no residential, but then you're saying that the residential people who are in the program now.
So, Madam Chair.
Pretty mute, please. We got a lot of noise going on.
Chair Burdick, I'm afraid I didn't hear your last.
The question is, I don't know what you're saying. What about residential people who are in the program now?
Chair Burdick, residential people who are in the program now have a 10-year term, and then if they have qualifying projects, they can do a second 10-year term, but that's the end of it.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at. But no new residential people, correct?
Correct.
And then for the commercial people, they get one 10-year extension, or they get unlimited 10-year extensions?
Chair Burdick, they would get unlimited as long as they had projects that qualified, and they would be reassessed between terms.
Got it. Okay. I think I understand it now, and you're correct. That is not what the Dash One Amendment says. So, so that needs some work. Senator Fidley, do you have another question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, I'm trying to ascertain, since this is a check that we're writing on the county's checkbooks, whether the counties had any involvement in review or work group or in the development of this process, because we're essentially writing a check on their checkbook, and I'd like to know that the assessors, the treasurers, AOC, or some organized county effect or effort was made to go through this bill in the development of it and the fiscal side of it.
Chair Burdick, Senator Findley, we reached out to the Association of Oregon Counties, the Oregon Association of Assessors, city planners. We had a list 20 items long of stakeholders that we reached out to. We have not heard back from the counties. They have long been pretty vocal when around this program if they don't like what we do with it. I expected to hear from them. I have not heard from them.
Thank you. Do you know they got your emails? I mean, I'm just trying to curious, because I'm quite frankly very surprised that they haven't had some comments on it, because that is, I find it very shocking.
Well, maybe while we're working on the amendment, we can do some other outreach. Senator Findley, I think you could help a lot with that, with your comments.
I will do that today, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, are there other questions from the committee? Okay, well, this is still a work in progress. So I think we're clear about where you're going on that. And Senator Findley will do some extra checking with the counties to see where they are, and we'll take this up at a later time. So I will close the, Jamie, do you have anything else to add before we leave this subject?
No, Senator Burdick, Chair Burdick, I will reach out to Chrissy and make sure that we get the language the way that they would like if they're working on additional amendments.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Senator Findley, did you have another comment? Okay. All right. That completes our work. So, Chris, do we have anything else we need to accomplish?
I don't think so, Madam Chair. I would note that Senator Boquist was able to join the meeting. I don't know exactly when. But
I just saw him there. So please mark Senator Boquist present. You were excused before Senator Boquist. So with that, we are adjourned.